Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 98 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we talk with James Young, the Chief Learning Officer at SCUP, the Society for College and University Planning. Before we turn to the interview, though, we want to thank Your Membership, the podcast sponsor for the third quarter of 2017. Your Membership's learning management system is specifically designed for professional education with a highly flexible and intuitive system that customizes the learning experience. Your Membership's LMS seamlessly integrates with key systems to manage all of your educational content formats in one central location while providing powerful tools to create and deliver assessments, evaluations, and learning communities. You can find out more about Your Membership at yourmembership.com.
For our resource for this episode, we want to highlight the Tagoras Platform Directory for Learning Businesses. As some of you listeners may know, we have for many years published a report on association learning management systems. Well, we retired that report last year, and we've now introduced the platform directory as the new way that we're providing information for organizations seeking to find and implement a learning technology platform. This is a free resource, and it profiles 30 different companies that are a good fit for trade and professional associations, as well as other learning businesses. You can access that directory by going to tagoras.com/learning-platforms, but we'll also have a link to that directory in the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode98.
And I know I'm excited that we've launched the platform directory, and I certainly hope that listeners will check that out. I'm also excited, though, that you got to talk to a bona fide chief learning officer for this episode of the show.
That's right. This conversation with James Young continues our CLO series here on Leading Learning, and Jim and I talked about the path that led him to become a chief learning officer. As he noted, CLO wasn't a job title he was aware of when he was a boy, and yet it's been a really good fit for him professionally. As CLO, he sees himself as chief strategist, so really the owner of the vision for change at the organization. And he also describes himself as an expert generalist, which is a term I really like a lot, expert generalist. He's been CLO at SCUP for about 3.5 years at this point, and he's spent that time translating market knowledge and research into what learners need, and he's focused a lot on a choice architecture, which is both the back end and the front end, and he has a chief information officer role as well in his past. So, you know, he can think in terms of both that back end and the front end. And he really believes that choice architecture is important because learners need to have choice. So SCUP right now is really in a period of active development around its learning. And Jim talks in this interview about the finesse that it can take to make big change happen when sometimes the timeline for execution can feel really slow.
Well, I love it that he notes that CLO was not a title that he was familiar with when he was young. I think it'll be a great day for the learning world when someone goes into career day at first grade or kindergarten and somebody pipes up and says, I want to be a chief learning officer when I grow up. So in the meantime, though, let's go ahead and roll what I'm sure is a great interview with James Young.
Hello out there. I'm Salisa Steele, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Today, I'm excited to be joined by James Young. Jim is the Chief Learning Officer at SCUP, the Society for College and University Planning. Jim, thanks for making time for the Leading Learning Podcast.
Thank you, Salisa. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. Thank you.
And since I offered only a very brief introduction, would you start things off by saying a bit more about the Society for College and University Planning, who SCUP serves, and how you serve them?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. SCUP is a professional association. We were founded about 50 years ago, mid-60s. We originally had a mission of connecting and serving leaders in higher education and campus planning. And for us, that translates to folks who are in architecture, people who are in capital planning, landscape, architects, designers, space planners, folks who envision and translate what we call the physical manifestation of the institutional mission. These folks are connectors. That's who founded our institution, our association. And we've since evolved into an organization that draws planners from all planning domains in higher ed. So we draw academics, academic planners, resource and budget people, people who are in institutional research, which is the people who run numbers and do quantitative research for campuses, information technology, libraries, advancement. We are really a learning community with the central vehicle of planning. So we're united by what we call integrated planning. And this is built off the notion that approaching problems is best together across rich organizational boundaries. So that's kind of the heart and soul of who we are, but also our value proposition. We like to think of ourselves as higher ed's dot connectors. So we have several product lines that most folks in associations will recognize. Membership, lots of content, books, articles, full complement of events. We're pretty deep into social media. We dabble into really interesting, innovative social experience we've done in the social experiments we've done in the last few years. And our emphasis over the past 3 years has been an emergent professional learning program, which I'll get into probably later in the interview. A couple of other quick thoughts. We have about 5,000 members, and that is a leading metric in associations, although we're currently trying to devise and measure new ways of engaging with our association. We view our job as meeting our members and frankly, folks who don't want membership where they are. So after all, we are an association of planners. So of late, our central question has been, how do we design an organization that meets the needs of the future learner? That's kind of been our central question as we have developed and executed on our current strategic plan, which we're still in the middle of. How do we design an organization that can evolve and become more agile? And the quick questions I have that help us drive at the sub-questions would be, how do we help institutions respond to complexity? How do we help institutions respond to change and uncertainty? And what do we need to do to shift an organization that serves planners in verticals, so people in their particular job area and their particular professional perspective, into an organization that serves everyone as a planner, which we really believe is the heart and soul of the future of our organization.
Well, that sounds great, especially those first two questions seem to really apply to all associations at this point.
Yes.
And then that third one obviously gets a little more specific to who you serve, but I still even think
right.
That one sort of tweaked probably is applicable to others. So you mentioned in there kind of at some point you're talking about sort of over the last few years, and my understanding is that you've been the Chief Learning Officer at SCUP for about 3.5 years at this point. And I think, too, that this is your first CLO role. So I'd be interested to hear a little bit about your background and the path that led you to this current CLO role.
Sure. I would love to answer that. First of all, I think I have the greatest title in the world. I think it's very fitting of not just innovation, but also what I care about and what our particular organization needs. And I also think that's applicable to other organizations. So until about 3 years ago, I spent the entirety of my career in higher ed. So I have a varied, very interdisciplinary background with significant threads in libraries, learning, technology. And what I think differentiates me is entrepreneurship, which is not a phrase you often hear in higher ed. There's lots of entrepreneurship, but it's pocketed. But I have founded lots of different departments, organizations, and I was the founding chief information officer of a startup university. So there's a bit of, gives me a perspective that's rich and frankly defines my career as one in which I'm super conversant at crossing boundaries. So the design of my career, as I think in retrospect, even using words that I wouldn't have recognized when I was younger, I view my career as I'm a student of integration. And what I mean by that, which I view integration as really the timeless imperative of the 21st century professional, and I think it'll even outlast me, how do we understand and navigate institutional and organizational boundaries? And when I say institutional, I'm talking about higher ed, is what I mean there. How do we transcend disciplinary or domain boundaries, people who have different expertise, who speak different languages, people from different industries, geographic boundaries? How do we navigate boundaries across diverse stakeholders and ideas? So my career has been by design and through experience. I've always sought out interesting experiences that kind of put me in the center of the innovation conversation. And the concept of integration has been driving that. So the phrase I think of on my journey to chief learning officer is expert generalist. And what I mean by that is I'm proud that I have pretty deep expertise in lots of different areas. But I don't consider myself a dilettante. A friend of mine used to call this like serial questioning. How does one become multilingual? Multilingual meaning not you can speak multiple foreign languages, although I truly value that. It's how are you able to speak to lots of different, diverse, rich stakeholders, engaged in change conversations, and even folks averse to change conversations, so that we can build bridges together through authenticity and care and empathy. I just think it's been a design in which it's easier to see patterns quicker and make connections and build bridges. So as chief learning officer, over my, I think, 25-year career now, in some ways it's a synthesis of my past experiences. In other ways, it signifies the launching point for the remainder of my career. I'm still young. The CLOs are not deep experts, in my opinion. And what I mean by deep expert is more narrow expert. I probably would consider myself a deep expert, but more of a expert generalist, like I said. My job is really to be a deep learner, and I think that I've designed my career to do that, and that makes me somewhat rare, unique, but also kind of a quick learner. I can enter into lots of different situations and come up to speed pretty quickly. A couple of other quick thoughts. Learning to me, I'll come back around to the title, it is preparedness. Mm-hmm. Learning is readiness, and this really gets at the heart of what we're designing here at SCUP. And one final thought, I'm a planner, and this is what our organization does, and we think that phrase planning or planner has a little bit of an image problem, mm-hmm. but we link that to innovation, and if anything, I've been evangelizing the notion of planning throughout my career. It's truly an indispensable core competency that I think, unfortunately, a lot of people often don't have time or the capacity to engage with richly.
Well, you offered a lot of great thoughts there, and so I have a few follow-up questions. I mean, one is as you look back over your career that landed you in this current CLO role, I mean, was it a conscious effort? I mean, did you imagine at some point, chief learning officer is what I want to be? Or was it more of a sort of a circumstances led you that way?
both. Uh-huh. My first job after I got my first professional job in the early 90s after I got my master's degree at the University of Michigan, something really early on drew me to newly created roles, new organizations that were thinking differently, wanted to. Back then, it was when the internet went Technicolor. So early 90s was, well, how do we re-envision libraries using information technology? How do we rethink the organization identity and the function of how a library works? So in some ways, I would say it's absolutely by design, because I've always sought out what is most important about learning, which is putting yourself in new contexts and new situations. Applying what you've learned from the past, not as a template and as law, but as a way to apply it to create new conversations and new landscapes and new relationships. So both in some ways. I didn't know the title would have existed when I was a young man.
Right.
But now that I'm in it, it's I'm surprised I don't hear it often enough. In a university, it would be probably your chief academic officer, your provost, and I don't for a minute say that I'm a provost, but I would be the equivalent of one for a small boutique association. And in other organizations, it's aligned often with talent management and how do you navigate HR functions, none of which I do here at SCUF. It's more linked to innovation and strategy and long-term planning.
Right. Well, and it's definitely true in my experience too, that the CLO role isn't very common at associations. And we've collected some data for the Tagoras Association Learning Plus Technology report. And that shows about a third of associations have a CLO or similar kind of executive role with a focus on learning. I obviously you came from kind of higher ed and landed at SCUP, but any thoughts or kind of your perspective on why you think it isn't a more popular, a more common role among associations?
Good question. Until about 3 years ago, I wasn't super familiar with associations from an inside perspective. I've been engaged in lots of really interesting associations throughout my career. I love the title, and it couldn't be more germane to use to get organizations to be thinking more creatively about design and innovation as cultural hallmarks for the future. To me, it's an evergreen competency, and it's something that truly is a timeless imperative, learning.
Right.
Why the actual title doesn't resonate, I'm not exactly sure. It's not like we're taking a risk like folks in Silicon Valley and technology companies where they create chief people officer, and they we're fond of that here at SCUP, but we also want people to recognize what we're about. So in some ways, this signifies an investment in learning, and it underscores who we are as an organization. So I don't know exactly, I can't speak to the broader trend.
Right. And, and I think you're starting to get into it, but maybe if you would talk a little bit more about what it means to you to be a chief learning officer, since you can speak to that, and when you think about leading learning at the Society for College and University Planning, what shape does that take? What do you think about?
Well, I'll start that by saying, I listened to a president who I really like at a university down in Florida. And he had been at the university upward to 20 years now. And when I saw him spoke, he'd been there about 15 years. And he would say, I've been three different types of presidents in 15 years. And I thought about that, and that's actually true for me and for us here at SCUP. What I mean by that, at this stage in our history, you would consider me a chief strategist. So people would respond as they always have in SCUP. It's a really sound community. People are very engaged. There's a lot of collective care. Where are the new products, Jim? And I would say, if anything, we have a lot of new product ideas. Our ability to execute on them in the short run is not strong. We are designing our organization to be strategic. We're designing it for the long haul. We're designing it for diverse revenue. And like I said earlier, we're designing it for the future learner. Who is the future learner? How do we design an organization to meet their needs? Which is, in some ways, a provocative question, but it is compelling and it draws people into a change conversation. So we are, ironically, for a planning organization, we're becoming strategic for the first time.
Mm.
So we're in investment mode, and I think I can lend some thoughts that I think are transferable to your audience. So I lead strategy building and deep dives into things like understanding what planners want and need much more specifically than what we've known in the past. What's going on in higher ed that people need help solving? How can we understand, define, and grapple with these problems together across boundaries using new models or frameworks or technology tools? How do we build an infrastructure and culture in which learners have choice? That's an absolute thread to my aims the first 5 years in my role here at SCUP. And when I say choice, we want to build off this market knowledge and the relationships that we have with our customers and our members, and to build this infrastructure and culture in which they will have maximum choice to help solve their problems. Embedding content and experiences and people into the lifeblood of one's day-to-day work life. What I mean by that, that's jargony, people need practical tools to solve problems. If we've learned anything about what planners want, it's really in that sweet spot. How does an association that has historically been designed to deliver events, and we're very good at that, pivot itself to turn into an organization that not just helps and supports, but leads conversations in helping us understand together across boundaries how to solve pretty complex, pretty intractable, culturally bound problems in higher ed. There's, depending on what news source you read, depending on what your political leanings are, without a doubt, we're in a fairly tumultuous period. What are we as learners and planners, how can we contribute to a really robust change conversation in, you know, driving thought leadership?
Mm.
So a couple other quick thoughts, and then I don't know if I've gotten off your question a little bit. So practical application and applied learning, assisting institutions, colleges, and universities with foresight and vision, doing something that most institutions are weak at, long-range planning. All organizations struggle with looking out 10 years or 5 years. Because we're an association, we focus on building what we call a culture of shared value creation. And what we mean by that is how and what ways can we engage volunteers in new ways as we evolve a fairly traditional membership model, as we evolve and take robust engagement, often bound in events, and make it durable across the boundaries of the entire association. What tools do we need? What cultural frameworks do we need? What staff do we need here, professional staff do we need in our office to help us do that well? In large part, I think of our work at a professional association serving higher ed as translation work.
Hmm.
How do we translate problems, pretty complex problems? How do we help people navigate fairly complex organizational structures in higher ed through new engagement modalities? And again, our, as I've said multiple times, our central value proposition is across boundaries through the notion of integration.
So that's great. It's a great sense of kind of what you're focusing on, what's driving, where you're going. So maybe if you would, could you tell us a little bit more about kind of what types of learning you're currently offering, and kind of based then on this work that you're doing and this kind of market knowledge and this idea of learners having choice, you know, what are your ideas for the future? Where are you trying to go and grow with learning down the road?
Sure. We still fairly traditionally pitched. Most people, as I think I said earlier, would recognize us as offering a fairly traditional organizational fare. Our unique value proposition, as I've explained, is integrated planning for higher education audience. We've been events-driven for nearly the entirety of the organization. We've always had a journal. We've always published books. We do social media. We're always ready to engage in some of the latest tools. Where we've been emphasizing in our vehicle for change over the past 3 years, and I'm deliberate when I say vehicle for change because it presently sounds like a product line, but we're using it as an incubator for how to innovate learning throughout the product lines, is something we call the Planning Institute. And the Planning Institute will emerge over time as the space in which we are building capacity. In the back end, what we call a product platform, how are we able to take what is traditionally known as 5 days, 40 hours of coursework over the course of a year in which you get a certificate at the end, not a certification, you get a certificate of completion, and unbundle those. We've basically taken the curriculum. It wasn't a curriculum when I started, and put it in modular format. It's still taught face-to-face, but the long-term design is to build up what is currently 45 modules of content upwards to 200 to 300 modules of content to take this intimate market knowledge that we're gaining on the larger problems people are struggling with in higher ed, but also their specific needs at their institutions and in their day-to-day departments, and linking that to creating a platform that will allow people to engage in ways that we've never really engaged with before, which is continuing to do in-person workshops, which are popular but have a limited reach and are fairly rigid business model, to a hybrid approach. We believe planners do want to engage together across boundaries. People want that, and that fits our vision. But what does it look like for them to engage online in new ways? And how do we create and extend a tool set for practical application so when people are looking for something to help them solve a planning problem in the short run, which, frankly, is how most planners operate. Most people don't have luxury or time to do the foresight. You know, that's a core competency that we push. Most people are what we call hot potato planners. How do we develop and design an organization to support the full range of planning activities? So we are building what we're calling a choice architecture, and the choice architecture will span the entirety of the product portfolio, but is currently embedded as an incubator in the Planning Institute. While we do a couple of things that are really important, I haven't mentioned it yet, but one of the core strategic initiatives I'm leading is something called organizational identity. And that is really two things kind of mashed up together. It's the organizational strategy, which is driven by the board, but is realized through my office, and brand identity. And merge those two things to me, is really key to creating a singular, indisputable, clear, unique value proposition for why people will engage with SCUP over time. So that's in the background, but it's linked to this notion of how do we develop a choice architecture. And when I say architecture, I'm talking about the back end, back to my CIO years.
Right.
I'm also talking about the front end. And what does it mean to engage across boundaries, if you like, face-to-face events, which, again, we succeed in, but I think the market has tapped out. What does engagement look like for younger planners? What does it look like for people who are really strong at IT and business continuity and security but struggle with long-range planning? How do we gain enough individual market intelligence about our customers and members to connect them in new ways, to solve problems with people they wouldn't have otherwise met? Well, that's so fairly general there, but that's we're in investment mode right now, and things will start to execute by fall of 18 in a way that our members and customers will see a lot of their input start to be realized in new tool sets, a clarified organizational identity, huge investment in information technology, which is currently a deficit.
Well, no, that's really great and really helpful. And I like especially what you were saying too about, you know, this is the vehicle for change as opposed to the change, and that you're very conscious of this fact that you're in this sort of transition period and really building up towards something, which is important to recognize that often, you know, we want to be somewhere further down the road than we are. And it's hard though to teleport ourselves to that future point. We have to kind of cover the road in between to get there. And it sounds like you guys are making great strides in getting towards that goal.
And yeah, so, I just wanted to quickly interject in the middle of your question there. That's really the challenge, even for an organization of planners, an organization of, you know, volunteer leaders who are professional planners, is navigating short-term real need, you know, keep the business going, keep the current product lines going, and we're doing fine. But and then all impatience at the pace of change, impatience at reaching the vision, which is still on the horizon. And that's what planners do. The question we pose to ourselves, I think, is germane, is does the present inform the future, or does the future inform the present? Mm. And that usually helps to write the conversation, whether it's at the board level or one of our committees or councils or even in-house, so that we stay together and achieve growth through focus, which is, I think, a struggle for all organizations, not just associations or universities, even corporate environments. So a dose of impatience and sense of urgency is indisputably important, but to put that in the framework of where we're going together is where the magic happens, I think.
Yeah, right, that balancing between the impatience to get things done and then the reality of it takes time to get those things done. So you've been talking a lot about what SCUP is up to, which is great and very, I think, interesting. But I'd like to ask you to pick up and think a little more broadly for a minute and just, you know, let us know in terms of what's going on with learning in general these days. You know, what do you find most exciting? And actually, maybe it is something that's the part of what you're doing at SCUP, but also on the broader kind of, you know, learning landscape, it might be something outside of SCUP, but, you know, any trends or changes that are particularly exciting?
I'm finding in the adult learning space, and this does build up several things I've mentioned, people want practical knowledge to help them solve problems. They want the ability to apply what they've learned to help them solve problems across. So they understand something in finance and it might help them solve a problem in a different, completely different domain, a different type of problem. I'm finding, and this is pretty generally pitched, but I think it's important here, people want to engage. There are some learners out there who really, their learning style favors more reading and more passive consumption and watching. I'm finding our learners want to engage. They want to grapple. There's a certain iterative sense, a certain reinforcement, and how that works. And for us, that means across modalities, across delivery modalities, not just in a face-to-face, but how do we extend a conversation in domains once people leave a conference or leave a workshop. Huge trend that I think smaller organizations struggle with, but I think it's indisputable. How do we translate what we know about our markets? How do we use data in more creative ways to inform learning in real time? How do we use data to pivot as organizations? How do we design an organization so that pivoting is possible? I'm finding even an organization our size needs to invest in not just the resources and the standards and the practices, but also the questions around collecting data, ensuring we have feedback loops of different time horizons, immediate ones, longer term ones, kind of short range ones. So we know how well we're doing, but we can also respond to our learners' needs quicker and more accurately. I guess finally, and I guess this is probably synthesizing a lot of the points I've made, what does it look like to create an extended learning community in a station? And what does a life cycle learning look like in an association? We're really digging deeply into that problem at SCUP, and we think that's applicable across organizations because it allows you to use a lot of the tools to track aggregated behaviors of your users, but it also allows you to think about tying together marketing, membership, and the learning function in ways that we sometimes think of them as separate pass-off relationships. So what does that durable life cycle of learning look like, and how does one create a multimodal learning community in an association? Those to us are helping us to think about not how to run an association like an association, but how to evolve an association so that the organization itself is agile and can stay true to itself while also pivoting as the world continues to change. So global stuff. I don't have specific tools for you. This obviously is reflecting our current focus, which is modernizing and transforming our association.
Right, but I think that focus on that life cycle learning, that where you have that extended relationship, long term relationships with the individual, and then pairing that with that extended learning community where they're also in conversation with each other. Both of those seem like amazing opportunities if we can figure out how to unlock them.
Right. It's less here we have menus of things that you can engage with than it is providing frameworks to navigate the content and the experiences and the relationships. And for us, it's that elusive framework that is probably invisible and in the background to our learner community. But it's something that really kind of drives an intentionality. And what better place than an association to engage meaningfully with your members and your customers? Back to that notion of shared value creation. I think that's kind of at the crux of our transformation journey.
Absolutely. So the next to last question, and this is one we like to ask everyone who comes on the Leading Learning podcast, and it's just about, talk a little bit about how you approach your own lifelong learning. There you are with that CLO title. I'm assuming, keeping up your own learning is important. So tell us how you do it.
Some obvious things and some not so obvious things. So I'm an expert generalist, like I say. So I'm a dabbler. So I read and listen deeply and broadly. Read traditional news sources like the New York Times, social media feeds, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I listen to podcasts because I find that's a kind of a nook and cranny learning that I can get in when I'm walking or commuting, doing the dishes, putting the kids to bed. There's lots of different ways you can fit in a podcast just with a phone in your pocket. One couldn't tell by listening to this podcast, I push myself to dabble outside my expertise all the time, and that pushes me into a professional learning mode in a maybe non-traditional way. I learn something small and practical each year, and so I set myself personal goals on what might stretch me, open myself up to new perspectives. My wife and I do this through non-touristy travel and exploration, A couple of other quick thoughts. A philosophy I've always had, I've always believed that traversing new landscapes, that by traversing new landscapes, we learn more about our homes and our communities and our neighbors, and it bridges our difference. And the only other thing I would say about my professional learning journey is my wife and I are really intentional about trying to understand and appreciate the world through our kids' eyes. Which, if anything, as we and age and have different perspectives, we kind of forget what it means to be a child. Mm. And why I say that and why it's important is I studied this for my dissertation 10, 15 years ago. I basically studied how one becomes an expert in a sociocultural environment. And when you become an expert, you forget what it means to be a novice. Mm. You forget what it means to be a learner, and your language becomes jargony, and you become inaccessible. And so this notion of trying to see the world through your kids' eyes, our kids are 7 and 9, is especially relevant because we've forgotten what it means to be 7 and 9. Mm-hmm. That's part of our learning journey. Mine is almost always about wanting to be challenged. Mm. That's to me what learning is.
Well, I certainly love the idea of travel as being important to learning. I love to travel and to really try to dig down and get to know a place for a little bit of right. time. And I also agree about children. I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they are, yes, constantly reminding me of things I have forgotten or things I never knew, for that matter. But
oh, right. I mean, to me, you know, it's a metaphor, but it's also something, there's an intentionality there. That even we just struggle being present, you know, normal things that parents would struggle with, no less as thinking of it as perspective making or perspective taking. Mm.
All right. Well, so last question, Jim, which is if folks would like to know more about SCUP, where would you have them go? And to the extent that you're open to it, you know, how can they connect with you?
Sure. We have a website that will be completely re-engineered in about a year, but right now it is scup.org, SCUP.org. It's still going to be scup.org in a year. Our Twitter feed is plan4 higher ed. And I'd be happy to engage over email. And my email address is james.young@scup.org.
Well, great. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Jim. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I appreciate you inviting me. Take care of yourself.
That wraps up our interview with Jim Young. As we're exiting, we want to say thanks again to Your Membership. You can find out more about Your Membership and all it offers at yourmembership.com.
To get show notes for this episode, which includes a link to the Tagoras Platform Directory for Learning Businesses, where you can get profiles of more than 30 different learning platforms, simply go to leadinglearning.com/episode98. And at that link, you'll also see various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of what you hear, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe.
And in addition to subscribing, we'd also be really grateful if you take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. It really does take just a minute. You go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. That'll put you in the right place. We really appreciate knowing that you're getting some value out of the podcast. And by putting a rating and recommendation there, you're going to make it much easier for others to find the podcast.
And finally, we hope you will consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet simply by going to leadinglearning.com/share, but you can feel free to spread the word using words of your own choice or using whatever social network you use to connect with your peers, whether that be Facebook or LinkedIn or something other than Twitter.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.